Dr. George Dimitri, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Good morning, I'm Taylor Wilson, and this is 5 Things You Need to Know Friday, the 16th of April, 2021. Today, body camera footage has been released in the fatal police shooting of 13-year-old Adam Toledo. Plus, looking into racism and extremism in the U.S. military and more. Here are some of the top headlines. 8 people were shot and killed at a FedEx facility in Indianapolis on Thursday night. Police believe the shooter died by suicide. The FedEx Indianapolis hub employs more than 4,500 people and is the company's second largest hub around the world. GOP House Leader Kevin McCarthy said he has no plans to take action against Congressman Matt Gaetz. Gaetz told McCarthy he's innocent, but is under federal investigation over whether he violated sex trafficking laws by paying for a 17-year-old girl to travel with him and having sexual relations with her. Charges have not been filed. And the Major League Soccer season begins on Friday. It's the league's 26th year. Limited fans will be back, and there's a new team, Austin FC. The video has been released. Body camera footage of the moment 13-year-old Chicago boy Adam Toledo was fatally shot by police is now available for the public to view after his family first saw the clip earlier this week. Here's part of the audio of the shooting. It's graphic, and if you'd like to skip it, you can fast forward about 15 seconds.
Please stop! Stop! Hey, show me your stop it! Stop it! Shots fired! Shots fired! Get an ambulance up here now! Look at me! You all right?
On the footage, Adam put his hands in the air when he was shot. According to one officer's body camera footage, the officer runs down an alley shouting stop at Adam. Adam runs away from the officer, then slows down and pauses near a fence. According to a surveillance video shot from across a parking lot, Adam can be seen tossing what appears to be a handgun behind the fence as he slows down. That's when the officer ordered Adam to show his hands, which he did, putting them in the air. The officer fired his weapon less than a second after Adam turned around to face him with his hands raised. Police say officers were dispatched to the area in the early hours of March 29th when ShotSpotter technology detected 8 gunshots. When police arrived, Adam and 21-year-old Ruben Roman fled. Activists are speaking out after the shooting, and Baltazar Enriquez, president of the Little Village Community Council in Adam's neighborhood, said Thursday, quote, "The truth came out. Adam had his hands up," unquote. Protests took place in the city Thursday night. Mayor Lori Lightfoot said, quote, "We failed Adam, and we cannot afford to fail one more young person in our city," unquote. Lightfoot urged residents to remain calm and peacefully protest. Demonstrations began last week in Chicago. Protesters have been demanding justice not just for Adam, but also Dante Wright in Minnesota. Thursday night protests saw people gather at downtown Chicago's Millennium Park. Among the protesters were family members of other victims of police shootings, among them Ray Wilson, a cousin of Jacob Blake, a 29-year-old black man shot and injured by police in Kenosha, Wisconsin last year, and Chantel Brooks, the mother of 15-year-old Michael Wesley, who was fatally shot by police in Chicago in 2013. She said, quote, "If we got justice then for my child, we wouldn't be here again today." The United States military is reckoning with racism and extremism in its ranks. And one story inside the Maryland National Guard has highlighted the discrimination. Sergeant Bruce Weaver, a black soldier there, was forced to wear a chain. Weaver told USA Today he felt he'd been subjected to the kind of punishment used by enslavers. Pentagon correspondent Tom Vandenbroek reports.
He and another trainee had left a site in Maryland to go to another training site in neighboring Delaware. And he says that he made all the arrangements appropriately. His instructors and this all-white instructor cadre in the Maryland National Guard said that he didn't give them the appropriate heads up so that they were going to punish him. So he arrives at Bethany Beach training site in Delaware, and he's almost immediately told that, you know, he's going to have to wear this chain, that it's a heavy chain, you can see it in the photo, that represented what he was told, the chain of command. In other words, the need to respect your senior officers or, the chain of command. And he was stunned when he saw it. He didn't really understand what they were doing, and they said that he would have to wear it. He was told to wear it. Maryland says, no, he only had to carry it. Well, the only effective way for him to actually carry it was to wear it, because he had to carry this thing around the entire weekend, including running from, you know, training station to training station. So he had to wrap it around his shoulder and his arm and wear the chain. And he objected to it at the time, he said, and said that it obviously was chains, as he told me, mean something to Black people, and that they were used to enslave Black people, and they have serious connotations. So he maintains to this day that his superior officers knew his complaints about that, why he was complaining about it, and that they disregarded it. I mean, hardly anybody knows what's going on in these states because they don't track their complaints very well. And that's something that we're finding right now. I mean, we've made FOIAs to various states for their complaints and to the National Guard Bureau for all the complaints it's received. And it's, you know, there's just a crazy quilt of regulations by state and not a very uniform way that they collect the information. Obviously, that goes to the next point. There's just not a set way that these cases are reported, how they're investigated, and how they're handled. So even Maryland is complaining to the National Guard Bureau about the lack of, you know, a set of rules that governs how these cases are investigated and reviewed. So that's the other part. There's just no uniformity. It's just a crazy quilt of regulations.
Bruce's story comes as the National Guard has been under fire in recent months for issues related to race. During racial justice protests last June, the Guard was deployed around the country, and its response in Washington, D.C. to mostly peaceful protests received criticism for tactics like buzzing crowds with military helicopters. Then, in January, tens of thousands of Guardsmen headed to the Capitol after insurrectionists, including white supremacists, attempted to overturn the election. Authorities found that several Guardsmen were suspected of sympathizing with white nationalists. To read Tom Vandenbroek's full story, search National Guard on usatoday.com. People will likely need a third shot of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine within 12 months of being fully vaccinated. That's what Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla told CNBC on Thursday. He also said that annual booster shots may be needed after that. Meanwhile, there's a small number of cases where Americans have become infected with the coronavirus after being vaccinated, but it's a tiny percentage, showing that vaccines are overwhelmingly effective. According to CDC data, less than 6,000 so-called breakthrough cases have been reported. That's out of 76 million Americans who are fully vaccinated. It's been 10 years since then-President Barack Obama created the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, and Congress is once again debating legislation that would allow immigrants brought to the U.S. as children to become U.S. citizens. Meanwhile, a Texas judge is set to rule on the constitutionality of the DACA program. That creates a potentially urgent deadline for the country to decide whether hundreds of thousands of young people who have lived here for most of their lives can finally have security and peace of mind about their future. or if they'll be deported to countries that many haven't seen in years. National correspondent Marco Della Cava has more.
So the situation for Dreamers, that's essentially a reference to the 700,000 folks who are in the United States as a result of being brought here as children. They're here now technically, legally, for two-year stints. They always have to reapply thanks to DACA, which is basically the acronym for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program that President Obama started in 2012. Well, that whole program has been fraught. Then President Trump shut it down in 2017, and then the Supreme Court last summer reinstated it. Well, right now there's a judge in Texas who's actually reviewing a lawsuit that challenges the constitutionality of DACA. And if he were to shut it down, really the only next hope for these Dreamers is the passage of a brand new act that President Biden has been pushing, which essentially is the American Dream and Promise Act, which would give these people finally a path to citizenship. And again, these are folks who came here age 3, 4, 5. They're in their 20s and 30s. Many of them have jobs with big companies. They're married. They're parents to American citizens. And so for them, they really have only known the United States and obviously want to become citizens. You know, more liberal-leaning folks who think that security at the border, which is what Republicans often want to trade for, shouldn't be part of any negotiations on Dreamers, because these are, again, folks who have been here pretty much their whole lives. But more conservative groups, such as the one we interviewed, FAIR, they're against sort of open immigration and very much feel that this is sort of all a path to too many people coming into the country who we can't help.
You can read Marco's full story by searching DACA, D-A-C-A, on usatoday.com. President Joe Biden will host Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga on Friday. It'll mark Biden's first face-to-face meeting with a foreign leader since taking office in January. They'll likely discuss a wide range of topics, from the coronavirus pandemic to climate change, and also this summer's Olympics in Tokyo. The games are still planned to go on after being postponed from last summer amid the heart of the COVID-19 pandemic, but the country currently has one of the worst vaccine rates in the world at less than 2%. Meanwhile, the two countries are particularly trying to strengthen their alliance as the U.S. tries to counter economic and military challenges posed by Beijing. The two leaders are also expected to discuss the human rights situations in Hong Kong and in China's northwest. Thanks for listening to 5 Things. Be sure to drop us 5 stars if you have a second on Apple Podcasts. You can also listen wherever you get your audio. Thanks, as always, to Shannon Green and Claire Thornton for their great work on the show. 5 Things is part of the USA Today Network.
Dr. George Dimitri, medical oncologist, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works, and then the expert clinicians that interact with patients and families every day. It's not easy to have input at a substantive level to new drugs that are safe and effective at treating cancer. So our whole mantra has always been to try to minimize risks to patients and yet try to maximize the opportunity of finding how effective a new treatment could be. And that means understanding cancer really, really deeply.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.